an interview with Sidoria Outlaw, who served with the U.S. Army Reserves since 1993. This interview is being conducted at the Center for Veteran Issues at the following address, 315 West Court Street in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. On the following date, May 30th, 2012, and the interviewer is Amy Mollenberg. Sidoria, I think a good place to start would be to explain and say your name. Maybe just introduce yourself.
It wasn't a culture shock, it was just different, that we experienced a lot of different races and generation, him trying to get to know us, and we're sounding different, looking different, and, you know, who are you? So, but I had a great time in school. I mean, I really love the school here. We did a lot of more nature things, like horseback riding and things of that nature. We lived in the city, so when I was in the city, we had to do a lot of that, and going to different camps and science world, and just a whole lot of different experiences that I never had.
Thank you.
go to basic training, you could do a couple of sessions. And so I decided to do the sessions to go in and see how it was. And I went in and it was good. I mean, I enjoyed it. Basically, just set in with the group that I would be working with. Kind of did some pre-military training. And then a lot of the soldiers that were already in talked to me and said, what you'll be doing. Kind of eased the stress a little bit. Then the 19th, I left. played the other teams. And that's what in between our, because when you're a basic trainer, you really don't get downtime. You really don't get, I should say, just free time to do whatever you want. It's all structured for the most part. So this would be on like a Saturday, a couple of hours or something, where other soldiers would be using the phone or doing something. We would be doing a voluntary. They didn't make us do it. We didn't voluntarily play the volleyball. And so that's when we would get like extra time, because we use our free time that we would be using to do laundry or anything like that to play the game.
Okay. Do any games stand out to you?
No, that was a long time ago. And I, one basketball game stands out to me in my mind, because we're out on the court and I'm out there running and everybody is pointing at my arm. So I'm looking around like, is that some kind of sign or is it a goat? So the team actually calls timeout because I'm totally dumbfounded what they're talking about. But I had my watch on and you had to take all your jewelry off so that people wouldn't get scratched. And that's the only one that stands out in my head, because I'm totally like, everybody just pointing at me. I'm like, what time is it? Or what? You know, it's just the weirdest thing. So that's really the only one that actually stands out in my mind from that initial, you know, what they're talking about, to the coach part time on. She was crying and just kept on watching.
I think when people who haven't gone through basic training think about basic training, they think about what they've seen in movies. And so how is it different from what we see in the movies?
I think in the movies, sometimes it's portrayed as more of a negative sense, like being yelled at, everybody's really mean, the drill sergeants really don't care. For me, I thought it was the exact opposite. Yes, there was yelling, and yes, there were things going on, but the majority of it was related to just soldiers that were doing things that they shouldn't do. And I didn't characterize their yelling or them disciplining us in any way other than the way I would get yelled at by my parents or something if I was doing something wrong. And I think also there is a lot of positive things. As a young woman or a young man, sometimes you can experience things at 18 or 19 that could really detriment your life forever. And I think with the military, looking at the skills that they taught, it was like, you know, I was very quiet. I was kind of, you know, shy toward people I didn't know. I really didn't, and I don't know if it's an inner strength, you want to call it, or resilience or what it is, but I didn't really know it was there. And so I actually got, you know, to do physical training tests or had to go through all of these different obstacle courses or taking a weapon apart, putting it back together. I also was a part of the drill team, so I learned all the different basic movements, but we participated in different, like, ceremonies where we had to do the movements. And a lot of those things that I never would try. I mean, I've always been kind of wanting to do things, just trying them. But some of these things I've probably never been exposed to, and traveling is unheard of. Like, traveling to places I've been with the military, I would never have gone. So I think when you look at those things on the video, you kind of can see the negative part in some cases, but you don't really get to see the camaraderie that's built with service members. I mean, some of the soldiers that I actually went to basic training with 19 years ago, I still know their names, even though I don't talk to them very often. And one young lady that I went to AIT with, and that's our, that is the actual training that we do after, it's our job training, military occupational specialty training. So I met her, and we were really good friends, and I still remember her whole name. And she found me on Facebook like a couple of months ago. And what was really fascinating is she named her daughter something similar to me. I think it's like her name is Dorian or something like that. So it's interesting how those 8 weeks of those 4 weeks impact you, and you have people from high school you can't remember their names. So just the camaraderie and the team building that is provided to you over the time, it's really unreal, you know. And the skills that you learn, like, say, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, it just goes with you. Even though I'm from Tennessee, the part of Tennessee we're from, we really didn't do yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, like with grandmother, grandfather. But even now, you know, discipline, walking, timeliness, punctuality, caring towards other people, all of those things that, you know, at 18 or 19, they start to erode if you don't continue to build. But with those things they put into you from the military, in some cases it actually helps you if you take away the positive parts. I mean, mean, there are parts that if you take away the killing and all of the different things like that, I mean, that could be evil too. But to me, I think the team part is something that I've noticed when I'm going to college or I'm experienced other, being around other people my age, it's different. There's a different type of team building. When someone says team to me is different than if I ask one of my friends what a team is. They just don't seem to get that. And I think that the military teaches you that the team is everything. It's about sacrifice, and the ultimate payment is your life. You know, so when you're building on these things, you're really understanding that actually your life could be on the line if someone on your team doesn't do what they're supposed to do, or their life could be on the line if you don't do what you're supposed to do. And I think at 18, of course, that wasn't clear to me. It seemed like I had a lot of games. This is fun. This is great. There's really cute guys here along in the chat, so it was really exciting in that sense. But so that piece of it is good, but just over the last 7 years, since 2001, 2003, the whole understanding of sacrificial time, service, and just giving your life has really come alive to me.
Do you think 9/11 played a big role in that?
Yes, I think 9/11 for me in particular was huge because I'd been in the Army before that, probably about 9 years, and just going to regular military reserve drills. It's like a weekend a month and 2 weeks a year. So going to those every weekend, and it was okay, you know, doing your regular job. When I first joined the military, I was what was called 57 Echo, and that is a bath and laundry specialist. And my interest, my pick, and I wanted to be a lawyer. They do have lawyers in the military, but obviously at the time, I didn't take the time to study for the ASVAB, like I said before. I just took the test, and my score wasn't high enough to go into the legal field. And at that time, just ignorant, didn't really know how to navigate or anything. So basically went into bath and laundry based on two factors. One, I wanted the shortest job I could get, so I didn't want to get up from home. Two, I wanted a job with all the benefits for Hollywood. And the bath and laundry specialist had both of those, and I couldn't use that even outside the work. You know, I was thinking about what it is. Basically what it is in a field environment, you have these big laundry machines that you would, the soldiers take their clothes and you wash them, and then you dry them, and then out also in a field environment, like if you're going camping, you set up big showers to take the showers outside. So it's basically very sanitary, it's very huge, it's big shower facilities where you can actually go into the shower. So we learned all of that, and it was on the phone. And I got the bonus, I got the GI deal, I got everything. So I was happy. I was pleased at 18, not really even focused, other than this was going to get me to college to become a lawyer. So that's the way I looked at it, and that was the job I had when I first started looking for the second batch.
I know we're bouncing around a little bit, but I want to back up to what was going on in your life before basic training. What was high school like for you, and where were you at before your life kind of changed in this particular direction?
High school was good. I mean, I was at Milwaukee Trade Technical High School. I was taking, they didn't have law there, but the closest thing to law they had was business. So I was taking business and accounting. While I was in high school, I did cheerleading. I also did pros and some dramatic reading. I also went to get some modeling, so I used to do some fashion shows. It was pretty average. I mean, had a good time, met people. During my senior and junior year, I gave my life to God, so a lot of things kind of went a different way, and I kind of became more focused on just academics. I wasn't really a party goer or any of those things. I mean, before that, I kind of was all square, I suppose. So I basically just went to school and did the work and came home. And then from there, basically just kind of after school, you know, coming home, I got a job working with kids. I love working with kids. So I was doing some child care work, working at the child care, and actually I'm very, the military enhanced the structure they already have for the oldest, and I have some younger siblings, so I can take care of them, so it's a natural fit for me. And then just basically, you know, have friends, different activities. for those 2 years then before that, just really experimenting. You know, in high school, like, never wore makeup. My first time wearing makeup was in high school. Haircuts. One of my friends was here. She kept getting my first haircut. So it was quite experimental that way, but nothing outrageous.
When you were talking about how your family gathered together to sort of say,
basically, with the help of the recruiter, we kind of talked a lot about the benefits of it. I grew up in the inner city of Milwaukee, so there was a lot of different negative avenues that kids could take. I mean, teenage pregnancy, drugs, and all of this different stuff. Not saying that in the inner city that's the only thing you have there, but it's always an option. So in talking to the recruiter, one of the things that he was saying is that this will for sure give me opportunities to have finances, money. And he said that this is a great path if I want to get out. I think I signed up for an initial 6 years, and I will only be going. It wasn't active duty, so I wasn't going to be leaving the state. I'm only for training. And then he talked about the benefits of just having the money for college. We talked about being with other soldiers. My parents really liked the fact about the discipline and continuing to not be in an environment where you could, you know, have different risks. And he was talking a lot about drill sergeants, make sure you're not doing negative stuff, you're not drinking, smoking, and they're watching you and all this kind of stuff. So those things make them feel better. And then just, you know, my mom really, you know, seeing that I really want to do it. And I said, you know, this is something I want to try. Even if I don't, you know, make it, I still want to try it. And, you know, we talked about, I was very adventurous. I wanted to be a police officer, too. So I think she actually took the military as a way of being a little less. Because in the 90s, there was a lot of police officers being killed with a lot of different, you know, stuff going on. And so I said, well, live peace. And he was explaining to her, there was no war, there was nothing going on. And she's going to come back, you know, she'll be back in 4 weeks, I mean, 12 weeks, because it's 8 weeks of medical training and 4 weeks for the class. So 12 weeks, she'll be back. You can call her, you can write her, she's not outside the state. So it really just made them feel comfortable. And I think my mom and my stepdad and my grandma, they just really saw that it was something I wanted to do, and they just said, we'll support you. And we'll be here for you. And my stepdad was in the Army too, so, you know, him being there actually making everybody used to it.
How is it different, for those who don't know, being active duty versus in the Reserve Army?
Sure. For the Reserve Army, you basically are what we call a citizen soldier. So you have your regular full-time job or your regular outside the military jobs that you're doing, or life if you're not working. And you go to drill 1 week a month, 2 weeks a year. If you're active duty, once you sign up, you basically, that is your full-time job. So you're doing that for whatever your contract says. For most people, when they first start out, it's either a 2-year, 4-year, or 6-year contract for active duty. Initially, for the reserves, you can also do like a 1 or 2-year contract, or you can do a 6-year, or it's called 6x8. So you do 6 years actively reserving, drilling, is what we call it. And then you do 2 years, you can do it inactive, or you can complete it, you do 8 years. And with both of those, you have different sets of benefits. So if you do 8 years active duty, you get a certain benefit. If you do 8 years reserve, you get a certain benefit. And so between the both of them, you have the same opportunity. The jobs are, some jobs are similar, like obviously you would have some jobs in reserves that you may have active duty just because of the time frame. The only difference now, since September 11th, is most reservists are actually working more hours than they were, because the reservists have a big role in this war, the Operation Iraqi Freedom, Operation Enduring Freedom for Afghanistan. There's been a lot of changes of attitude. Specifically, the reservists were more of a reserve force, so they weren't used as much. And so in some cases, they were not as looked upon as the same as active duty. Like the active duty was seen as soldiers, reservists were seen kind of not many soldiers, because you're service may be a nurse in the real world, and then she's a nurse in the Army. So in the Army, there may be services that they may have never used, but because she's in the real world, she actually has more skills based on those two combined together. Or you could have a specialist who is a lawyer in the civilian world and an infantryman in the Army. So when he comes in, he not only brings an infantryman with him, but he brings a lawyer's skills too. And I think that those weren't taken into consideration initially. And also the ability of the community to support the reservists, because they're coming from workforce, they're coming from home, mothers, daughters, and also just bringing in a whole different aspect as different than the active duty. In active duty, you know, they do their job every day, they go, and they're competent. And I think just looking at the reservists is also being competent, or in some ways having a different level of competency, but being just as much a soldier as an active duty.
How would you say you're different in the real world versus when you're called to action?
Okay.
When you're saying, you know, in the real world, some people are this, and then when they are called to action, they're like this. So is there a difference, or could you sort of describe? I don't even know if this question makes sense.
Sorry.
But do you see where I'm trying to get at, where do you have to put on a different jacket, you know, or a different sort of mindset when you leave your civilian role to the other one?
Yes, you definitely do. For example, when you're in the civilian world, you may be a lieutenant colonel in the military, but you're obviously not a lieutenant colonel within a regular world. So for me, I'm a lieutenant. So when I'm in my role at the Army base, I have a lot more authority because I'm an officer. When I'm in the civilian world, I am a supervisor, but I don't have as much authority. I mean, I have some because I'm a supervisor, but when I wasn't a supervisor, I really didn't have any. So it's kind of like there is a respect level that is different. And I also, of course, wear a uniform when I'm in the Army versus wearing civilian clothes. And then just your level of just responsibility. Because when you're now as a lieutenant in the Army, I'm taking care of soldiers, and my whole focus is to make sure they're getting home safe, they're coming back, they're doing everything they need to do. How can I help them get to where they're going? What is my role in making sure that these soldiers go to training and come back safe? When we were deployed, just the whole attitude was totally, I mean, when you're going to the military, and I thought we were going to Iraq, there was, I can't describe the emotion I felt, not even understanding at first, because I still had a civilian mindset of what I was even doing. Until it was one soldier that we were doing a weapons, and he was an MP, and we were trying to open a meal ready to eat, this club MRE. We were trying to open that, and I couldn't get it open. So he pulls out this big knife. I'm like, oh my God, I don't need a big knife like that to open this MRE. So then he pulls it out and it's in his boot or whatever. You know, we're going through this whole motion of why you haven't had a big knife. And then he looked at me and he said, do you know where you're going? So I said, well, and he said, you are going to Iraq and the people there will be killing you. And it still hadn't dawned on me at all, any of this. I mean, because every training I ever went to, it was more of a mindset of peacetime. It was not somebody going to kill you, you're going to die, even though that's our, you know, role. But as an 18-year-old, you really don't think about that. You're thinking about these are our friends, we're together, they're challenging us in the game. And so just listening to him, and then what really got me is my background is I have a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's degree in psychology, so I really look at behavior. His eyes, the way he was looking at me, he was like, he could not come home. And I'm looking at him like, I don't, you know, get it. And when he said to me, he said, I'm tomorrow going to bring you a book. You don't have one. I'm like, okay. And he said, if I don't make it back, I want you to tell my son that I love him. And I'm like, what? I'm going to make it back, you know? And it really dawned on me all of the stuff that had actually transpired from 2001 up until 2003, looking at the news, seeing the chemical warfare and all of this stuff, that we could possibly die, that when I actually got on the bus after this event, I mean, I was just bawling. I'm thinking to myself, wow, I really could die. So when you look at it from that sense, the mindset is as a civilian, you never come to work thinking you could die, you know. But as a soldier, when you go into this training or you're going to the war, you could actually not come home. So the mindset has to be that you're going to make sure that you come home and that everybody around you can come home. So you take on a whole different role versus just driving in my car, coming to the Center for Veterans Issues, saying I'm going to do my best work when I drive to the Army base, you know. And then just with the all the rhetoric of what's going on around you and all of the people, you know, like the soldiers that were killed when they were eating dinner or breakfast and lunch, wherever it was, in Oklahoma, you have these different ideologies now. It's totally different, whereas wearing a uniform used to mean that, you know, you just go and stare at you and they're looking at you like, wow, she's in the military. Now it's like people coming up to you either saying thank you or you being suspicious, like, okay, why is he looking at me or what's going on? So your mindset has kind of changed over time just based on the events that are going on in the country today and based on the more knowledge that we actually have of terrorists and of the events that people actually do want to hurt. So it's kind of a totally different mindset. For me, I can speak for myself and just say that initially it was like going to drill, it was fun, it was meeting people, and you had friends, and now it's more going, this is a job, making sure that you're kept in touch. So it's kind of been a whole change in my mindset based on the events that happened.
When and where were you when you were having this conversation with
I was actually at Fort McCoy, which is the base of the Fort McCoy, Wisconsin, Sparta, Wisconsin, Tacoma area. And we were on a mobilization, so there's three levels. There's the first level is activation. When you're a reservist, you get activated. So I got the call at night that we've been alerted, meaning we've been activated. And then once you get activated, you actually get mobilized. So you get an order saying that you're no longer a citizen, so you're now federalized and you are going to be activated. So we got the order for 1 year to support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. So once you get the order, you go up to your station to get trained up. So we're actually getting trained. So we were at Fort McCoy for about 4 months doing various training. And it actually was in the winter, which was very cold in the winter. And we were very cold.
And when was this?
This was February of 2004.
Okay.
And so we were in Fort McCoy and going to get trained up. And like I said, initially, I think I was 27 or 26. So we hadn't done a lot of rifle exercises, so I wasn't the best at shooting. So I actually had to go and do some training to shoot. Mm-hmm. And what they did is combine units together, and that's how I made the
military police.
Right. Military police.
Right. I knew that one. Maybe while we're here, we can talk to me about where you were when 9/11 took place.
Actually, this is quite an interesting story. So I've worked in social services for a while, and I was working with children that have mental illness. And I usually don't listen to the radio, basically because I mostly listen to spiritual CDs and stuff like that. So I was driving in the street, and I was actually changing the CD. So I pulled this CD out, and I hear on the radio, it says, oh my God, then another one is going to the building. I'm thinking they're talking about baseball, so I just popped the CD back in and keep driving. And I can't attend to anything. So I get into work, I'm at my desk, and we had had our battle assembly, our drill, the weekend before, where sometimes we'll do what's called a leave of six, where there's a Friday, Saturday drill, so on your what's on the work, you just put them out on the military training message. And so while I'm sitting at my desk, I keep getting these calls, you know, ringing, but I'm busy doing stuff, so I don't pay attention. And finally, my mom is calling me frantically. And this message was still on my voicemail that I was going to be going to military service. So she actually calls into the front desk, press zero or something, and was like, I need to speak to my daughter. And what does she mean she's going to military? She's thinking, because this happened, I'm being activated. So I still didn't know. I'm like, I just called her and say, calm down. I don't know what you're talking about. And so then all of my coworkers, my supervisors, called everyone into his office and said, the president is getting ready to speak. And it's like, everybody should come in here and listen. And I'm still dumbfounded to this whole thing. And I'm like, I don't want to come in your office and listen to the president speak. I have work to do. So I'm still sitting at my desk. And finally, he said, everybody come in and listen. So we went in and I'm listening. And I'm thinking, wow, this is serious. Something really happened, you know? So I still go through the whole day. And it wasn't until I actually drove past, I was light going on around it. And that is when it dawned on me, like, oh my God, something really is happening. And I really didn't still, you know what it was. I knew it was serious, but I'm like, I've never seen this tank move. And why is this tank, you know, moved or in this area, or it was in a different position or something. It was just like, so after that, then I get home, my mom started talking about, you know, because they were talking about they need to pick his teeth and they need to get some of their hair. And she was just really freaking out, saying she needed my hair and do I have dental records? And I'm thinking, like, really, Mom? Because I'm not going to give you all that because I don't know what you're really talking about. And so it was probably months later because we didn't get an activation call in February. It happened 2 years before. And so just going to the regular, it was really starting to get a little nerve-wracking looking at the news and everyone saying all these things about these generators and the J-list suits and, oh, it was just really weird. So just from that time on, I kind of figured that something was going to happen, but nobody really knew what was going to happen, and it was really weird that from 2001 when it happened, and what else was fascinating is me and my friends went on a trip to New York, so we had already bought a ticket, and airlock is safe to go. So actually, I think it was 2000 or 2001, it was December after September 11th, we actually went. And we went from the ball drop there, and I don't think I've ever in my life seen that many police officers. I mean, they were everywhere. And it was such a celebratory event that the police officers didn't really take away from it, because I wasn't sure if they were just there because it was, you know, a celebration, or if it was added because of September 11th. So it was just really fascinating, the whole situation. I think now, looking back on it, it's very sad how you go through your day and you don't really even know that it's happening. I mean, I literally didn't know that it was happening until I got home.
You might have been the last person to know about 9/11.
That's just how busy and focused I really was paying attention. And really, and I don't know, you just moved so quickly. And I was just like, oh, my mom was the one that was really pressing the issue.
Yeah. So then what happened in the winter after your 4 month training in the winter of 2003, you said it was?
Mm-hmm. So what happened was because Turkey at some point backed out, we were going to go through Turkey because our hospital was about 550 personnel strong, and that was like the hugest activation that they've seen in Wisconsin for our medical hospital that I'm aware of. I don't think we had ever been activated in that manner with all of the parts together. And so they took us all up to Fort McCoy, and then because Turkey, the thing is they never told us Fort McCoy. But we got all of this cold weather gear, like we got furs on our hats and all of this stuff, so we were working in the cold. And we didn't get the desert uniform, so it was quite interesting. But after the 4 months, they said that it actually, we didn't have an issue. And we didn't understand why, but after 4 months, they deactivated everybody. I actually had a bad reaction to the anthrax on the second or third shot. That's one of the deployment immunizations. So I stayed on what we call medical hold for about 9 months after that. And just going through rehabilitation and just getting back up to speed from that. Instead of like an allergic reaction, it was a little then after that,
okay, so you didn't end up going
to the hospital. We didn't go directly, just got activated and mobilized. Like I said, there was 550 of us, about 120 or so went to Afghanistan. So they made a little sliver of the 550 going, left a lot of them go to Afghanistan. One of our soldiers actually died in Fort McCoy. She had a bad reaction to the immunization as well. And apparently, from what they said, I didn't see documentation and anything sort of quoting on this, but they said she had lupus that was laying dormant, and when she took the immunization, it brought it out, and she got really ill over very quickly, and then she passed away. So I think that with our commander's role is not to have her really die day, and all of us go home without having missions. So the mission that they gave us for only 450 people, and so they went to her in Afghanistan, and they actually made the camp after her.
That's How did they determine who were among those 450?
Basically, you have an info, which is like a military roster, and it tells you what the mission would be. And so they basically took a sliver of the hospital based on the medical needs that they had. They really didn't need a full combat support hospital. They only needed a sliver to replace soldiers that were already over on that mission.
When 9/11 finally sunk in with you, how did it sort of affect you emotionally?
I think emotionally it was really, really sad. For me, I think the saddest part was the fact that it seemed like we were so vulnerable that we could not know that this was happening. And it's like unbelievable. Like, we have so much sophistication, we're a huge nation, and to allow someone to come all the way here and then live among us, and they just, you know, took all these people's lives. And then the other part was, I have friends that live in New York, and one of the guys actually worked in the tower, and just trying to call him, it was just like this dead silence. And the other part that's so emotional and sad for me too is the fact that I never know who God is, because there's no way, I mean, unless I go to New York and look on the wall, or I didn't know his family. You just, you know, you meet people. I've met on spring break, and we talked all the time. And now the World Trade Center is gone. There's no way to stay and be there. You don't want to, like, call somebody's family. So that was scary. And then actually talking to my friend that lived in New York, he actually said that his sister, or he had an interview at the time, and just listening to him talk about it was very touching as well. And then to actually go to New York, and it feels like you've been robbed. You can't see it. They're gone. There's all you can do is just see a picture. And it's like, to me, why? We didn't do anything. These people were innocent. They had nothing to do with war. They don't even have an idea of why they were even targeted. And to watch the videos is really just the saddest situation I think I've ever seen. People even never knew what even did. And trying to figure out why it is. Because for my unit now, I'm part of a program that works to build training for the soldiers in this area. And so when you look at, we have to go through and read all these different scenarios that actually happen to build a better, I guess, a better plan. So when you look at that, it's really, it doesn't, I don't know how you could just do that to somebody. And even, I'm very spiritual, and I have a very extensive just religious faiths, and I still don't see how you can say that God, your God, doesn't mean that perfect life. I just don't understand it, and I know that that's the definition of a terrorist, but at the same time, it's still deeply sad for me to know that you would hurt innocent people. When you have war, that's one thing, because you're clearing it, you have a natural enemy, everybody's fighting, they all have weapons. But to hurt unarmed people that weren't even expecting it is, to me, not really, I don't know, it's just really not, there's no excuse, there's no definition, there's no real reason why you would ever do it.
It's like they broke the rules.
Right.
When, this is not that related, but when you meet someone, where in meeting them for the first time do you tell them that you're a lieutenant or a soldier?
I usually do, unless it's a police officer, just put them in a break.
I tell them right away. But I don't know that it usually comes out, unless it's in a setting where the military is relevant,
or where somebody asks, you know. Other than that, I think I really volunteered specifically now, because it almost feels like you don't know people anymore. Like, these people, when you look at the people that committed back on September 11th, they were normal people. I mean, they didn't look any different than anyone else. They weren't, you know, tagged. They were here training. I mean, so it's kind of odd when you're in the military now, especially when, like, the different regimes, they say different stuff. Like, at one point, you can wear your uniform in the airport, so it's fine. Everybody's saying thank you. Next thing comes out, no, you can't wear your uniform in the airport, you know, don't wear your uniform. Then it comes out again, okay, wear your uniform. So it's nearest, but at some points, just remembering what surrounds I'm in, and not as free as you want it to be, and saying, you know, you can walk around saying it. But if someone asks me, I definitely would tell them. But if it's a veteran event or something like that, of course, you know, think about it. Especially when you're around other veterans, you know, we just talk about what we did, our war stories, and what happened, and all this stuff. So I know the person's a veteran, but we always mention, even with the guys I work with now in the prison, we always talk about different parts of it. You still have to be a little careful with that, too, you know, when you're working, you don't know, you know, finding people. Especially being a female, too, you know. And so, you know, being able to know, because the military is public records for the most part. And this is a job, you know, this is a job that I get all my stuff by showing up to my house or my army base. And, oh, I'm going to go there, too. Really? This is not the public question. So, I think that just for the most part, it comes up.
Right. Can you speak to being a woman in the military? This hasn't come up in our interview yet, but let alone being a man and a woman in the military.
Right.
But how do you think the experience is different being a woman?
I think, like, some roles in the military are seen as more female roles, so I think that that's the difference in being a woman in the military, in the sense of women can't go into the infantry, women can't be rangers in the army. So I think in some instances that has been the role part of it. So you clearly know that you're a female because they're going to offer certain jobs to you that they wouldn't offer to the male. Also, with all of the standards for the physical training test, there's female standards and there's male standards. And I think just the general idea of what women bring to the military is different than what men bring to the military. Obviously, if you're there, you may not be the best person to do a lot of different rifle classes and rifle training because they think that some women don't know. But what's fascinating is that over the years, women have really evolved to be something that the men didn't expect. Oh, wow, she's an expert. Oh, wow, she's into shooting rifles and, you know, really, and not in a negative sense, but in the sense of just sort of like the active duty and the reserve issue, that sometimes you may look at a person and say, oh, she doesn't look like she can do this, or, you know, different pieces. And I think there is some, categorizing, how you want to call it, but the medical field has a category, the combat arms has a category, so you're combat support and there's combat arms. So when you're interacting with combat arms, they don't actually understand the medical part of it and the whole aspect of what it means to medically be a soldier in the military, whether you're female or male, and to actually, I don't understand why there's not of it either. Most recently, last year in January, I had the privilege of going to Uganda and Africa to work with a medical planning mission. And it was very fascinating to me to see they were both in the Army, but we see things very differently. I mean, they're looking at it from the standpoint of the scouts, which are the soldiers, the foot soldiers that go out and do pieces, from my own recollection of it, this is not a real but they go out and do the footwork for the infantrymen and do a lot of other military pieces. Probably shouldn't quote that, I'm like, well, she's lying. So basically, listening to their aspect, and then I'm looking at it from the medical side, it was just quite fascinating from, you know, them looking at what we do and me trying to understand what they do. You know, even though we're both soldiers, we're both in the Army, and we both, you know, signed up the same way. So bringing that piece, and then another part of it was one of the Ugandan military, I don't know if they have their name, women. I didn't see any women for the Ugandan Army that were there, but they actually came to me because I was medical. Now, I didn't tell them I was a nurse or a doctor or anything, and they had to ask me for medicine, like Tylenol or anything, and they were just like thinking I was going to diagnose it. So it was just interesting. Just because I said I was medical, they just assumed I was a doctor. Or there was a preventive maintenance guy there. They assumed he was a doctor because he was medical. So I think the women in the military, the nursing corps, is by far the oldest corps in the women's auxiliaries in the nursing corps. So I think some of the roles that the nurses play are still there, and nurses today are still in the military. As far as the rank level and the leadership and a lot train experiences I've had, they don't really do that. Just use a tree or build a woods or however they want to do it. But sometimes I think those pieces are there as well as just being able to withstand some of the things that actually happen around you. It's different. People see trauma as different as well.
Sometimes when I go to ask
I think, like I said, there's combat arms and there's combat support. Georgia side or whatever. And I think that that young lady is different than the one young lady I was when I first started out, because, and I think it's because of the acceptance of a lot of the enlisted, leadership, that they really do appreciate the laws and the changes, and they do follow them, because it is a regulation. You will get in trouble if it is found that you are harassing male or female, race, religion, whatever it is. And a lot of our commanders and the higher people, I think that they are supporting more versus, you know, like looking at some of the films that they show when they didn't support it on a different role. And I think the other thing that helps, a lot of women are actually getting into leadership roles, and they are able to speak out and advocate. And I think women are also able to, because of community and the reservists and all of these, you know, because when you're a reservist, you're not just a part of the Army, you're part of the community. And when you go home and you say this happened to you, it's not just the Army that's wrong, it's the whole community. Like, what happened in the military? And then you are a part of that, so it brings about a different change. Now, have we gotten to where we want to be, or where it's great that you don't see discrimination enough? But are we in a better place? Yes. Because I felt, and the timid as I did when I was especially something I would say this morning. But now it's more of, I see that the things that you put into place, they actually work. And, you know, I remember one drill sergeant who was out there, and he was talking about, he said a negative comment, and everybody in the room, we all kind of fringed, and you kind of didn't know what to do, because you're like, you're not going to say anything back to him, because he's your sergeant. But I don't know who told or what happened, but within like a couple of hours, he came back and apologized. So, you know, and then you have a whole different triad of women, too. I mean, I've had some soldiers come to me and say, when I was younger, especially, oh, I'm going to get the drill sergeant to do this and this. And I'm like, really? Why? Because I don't know what you're talking about, and I don't think you should be telling me that before I go and pick somebody. And so, I mean, people have different motives. And it's really fascinating to see both sides, the side where they're the victim, someone's the victim, or if they're the perpetrator or bringing it about. And I think because of some of the women that do that, it sometimes men try to, not me, but soldiers or whatever, try to make it seem like that's why she got it. And the whole philosophy now is it doesn't matter. She's a soldier, you are a soldier. So if you decide to violate each other in any way, both of you can be prosecuted. And I think the military has gotten better at prosecuting and being much more upfront about the training and not just being in the background about those kinds of things.
You hardly wondered if there was harassment in the 1940s, but because 60 years has passed, we've covered it in those parts.
Right. And I think it could be. I think that it's just sometimes when I just had to speak at the Day of Honor, so I had this I did a lot of research on these different statistics. And one thing that was fascinating about that time is that a lot of the women went with the soldiers. So when they went with their soldiers. So that's different if you know this is Jenny's husband or this is Jenny's wife. You're not going to be an advocate to do something to her if you know who she is, especially if you have that marital bond and that's your friend, blah, blah, blah. Or if you, some women describe